Welcome, good evening, to part three of Heartwood. We heard how the king had got lost and his queen, who had once been of the fae, watched and watched for his return, but he never came, and she pined and pined with grief. How her three sons set off after hearing the story of the magical healing tree from their nanny, their nursemaid, set off and searched and found a map with an old yet forgetful hermit who had hair so long and skin so dirty and nails so curled you could not tell where one stopped and another began. And so the three princes, they took the parchment map that had been found in the belly of the fish that the hermit had given them for breakfast, and set off on their quest. Heartwood, part three. The three princes walked for a while in complete silence. The eldest, because after all he was the eldest, kept hold of the map, and they would peer at it occasionally. But they didn't really know which way they were walking. They began to argue. Oh, at first, just little snippets, but as the day wore on and the sun grew higher and they grew hungrier and hotter and thirstier, they grew more irritable until every word was a scratch against the brain and everything was an argument, until they reached a fork in the road. Now, I don't mean the sort of fork you would use to eat your dinner. I mean a fork with four branches, four roads off of it. They looked at the map, and they couldn't work out which way to go. And they began to argue, and they began to tug at the parchment. They began to pull, and in fury and fist, there was a terrible tearing noise. And the map was torn into three pieces. They were all a bit ashamed of themselves. And this is where they made their pact. They said, if we are to save our mother from this wasting grief, we have to behave like the princes that we are, and we must be better than our weaknesses. They decided that each would take a road to try and find the magical healing tree. They would give themselves a month, and when the moon was full again, they would meet back at this very spot. If they had found it, all would be well, and the other two would accompany the one brother that knew its location. And if none of them had found it, they would know that the last path was the one to travel. And so they rolled up the three pieces of map, put it in their pockets, and they set off. And I am going to tell you the story of the eldest prince who took the first path towards the west. He travelled for many days, until he saw a man blundering through the undergrowth with a bow and an arrow. But he was making so much noise that every animal was fleeing before him, and eventually the hunter, for that is what he was, stumbled into the eldest prince, and the eldest prince grabbed him and said, my friend, my father, the king, was a hunter, and really you will catch nothing with this method that you have. And the hunter's shoulders slumped. He said, in truth, my friend, he said, I don't really want to be a hunter. I hate killing things, you see, but I live in a modest cottage with my mother, who's blind, and my father, who seems to know everything and did everything better than I did, and my wife. And I love my wife, but nothing's ever quite right, and well, everybody wants something from me. And if I can just bring home something to eat at the end of the day, will they give me a little piece? The eldest prince smiled and well, he said, I can totally understand that, but you'll not catch anything. Ah, he said, I have a secret thing that I hunt. Would you like to see? Well, the eldest prince was intrigued indeed, he said, and followed the hunter. The hunter left the path until he came out onto a great field of turnips, where the hunter, proceeded to ruthlessly strut up and down with his bow and arrow, going, "Ha ha! It's no good running from me, you little devils! I'll get you!" And he would fire his bow and arrow and, well, ruthlessly mow down at least 3 turnips at once. And then he would take them back, and he'd smile at the young man, the eldest prince, and say, "You see, this is what we will have for dinner tonight." And the eldest prince said nothing, but thought perhaps that might be a reason why his wife was so ill-tempered. Well, who wouldn't be if you ate turnips for every meal? But he asked the hunter if he could follow him and spend some time with him, for indeed he said he was looking for a magical healing tree. The hunter knew none of it, but offered hospitality. And there the hunter came, knocking on the door, and his wife opened it and said, "So what have you got?" "I have the most delicious," and her face fell as she said, "It's turnips again, isn't it?" "Oh yes, my love, but no one shows such creativity as you with a turnip." And then, turning to the prince, he says, "What this woman can't do with a turnip shouldn't be talked about. She can make turnip stew, turnip kebabs, turnip curry. She can make turnip ice cream and turnip cake." Well, the possibilities were endless. And indeed, they all sat down that night. The prince and the hunter, his wife and his mother that was blind, and his old father that seemed to know everything, for everything had been better in the old days. And they had turnip stew followed by turnip cake. "What you need," said the old man, "is a little bit of money. A little bit of money would make this situation so much better. Then you can employ someone to hunt for you." "What we need," said the old woman. "Well, I'd like my sight back. If I had my sight back, I could help around this beautiful house." For indeed she couldn't see the hovel that she lived in. "What we need," said the hunter's wife, "is meat and a child. Everything would be so much better if we had a child. I could even cope with the turnips, although the prospect of a child eating turnips for every meal is almost unthinkable." The three of them looked at each other, and the hunter looked at the prince, and, well, they all made their way to bed that night. And the evening was punctuated by little popping noises, the sort of thing that happens when you eat too many turnips. It seemed that the embarrassment was too much for the hunter's wife, and in the morning she says, "I will have no more of it," she said. She handed the bow and arrow to her husband. She said, "Do not come back unless you are bringing meat. If you don't bring meat, the door is barred to you." And the hunter and the eldest prince went off together, and they searched, but, well, his technique, he made so much noise, the prince knew it was never going to work. And then they saw a fluttering of white feathers down by the lake. And as they made their way, there in the lake was a great white swan, its foot caught in the cleft of a sunken branch, its mate wheeling high in the air, calling that the hunters was coming. But the swan couldn't move, its leg was stuck fast. The hunter, swallowing deeply, raised the bow and arrow, but it hardly seemed like good sportsmanship. One tear trickled down the eye of that great white swan. And the great prince, the eldest prince, he put his hand on the hunter's shoulder and said, This is not right, my friend." And as that tear hit the ground, a little green shoot appeared. But then the hunter thought of his wife and her wrath, and he raised a second time the bow and arrow. A second tear trickled down the beak of the great bird, and the eldest prince patted again the hunter and said, "This is not right." "I know," said the hunter, hunched over now and ashamed. And then the strangest thing happened. The swan began to speak. It raised its head and said, "Son of man, I would have given you 3 wishes, but twice you've tried to kill me. But if you are brave enough to pluck a white feather from my throat, I will give you 1 wish." and so the hunter passed over the bow and arrow to the eldest. "This seems fair," he said, and he walked towards the swan. Now swans can be fearsome creatures, and I don't advise anyone to do it. They could break your arm if they were so inclined to do, but this swan just looked and held its neck high, and the hunter walked towards it, plucked one white feather from its neck, and then the swan slipped its foot from out of the cleft of the sunken branch, flew skyward and away with its mate, as if it could have done all along. The hunter and the eldest prince walked back to the cottage, knocked on the door. "Have you got meat? I've got something better." "Really?" said his wife. "You haven't got turnips?" "No, not a turnip in sight." She went, "Oh, you have meat? This is wonderful. It's even better than meat." She said, "You've got meat and vegetables? Even better than meat and vegetables?" She said, "Oh, you've got meat, vegetables and gravy? Even better than meat, vegetables and gravy." She said, "You've got cake to go with it?" She said, "Oh, my love." She flung open the door and he said, "I have this." She said, "It's a feather." "What do you want me to do with it? Fry it? Boil it? Put it in a stew?" She was so angry. He said, no, it's a special feather." "Oh, a special feather," she said. "Is it? What does it do?" He said, "It is one wish." Nonsense. She led him in, though, curious, for the feather seemed to sparkle with an unearthly light. The feather was put in the middle of the table, and the eldest prince watched. "Wish that we have a child," she said. "Go on, do it." No, wish I have my sight back," said the old woman. "No, wish we had a bit of money," said the grandfather, the old man. "Then everything would be all right. And all the hunter wanted to do was wish for tools so he didn't have to hunt." He was so confused. He took the feather and he went and sat by the lake. And the eldest prince said, "I have learnt that sometimes people don't listen to you. But there is a time to speak. Sit. Think, wait, watch, listen." And the two of them sat by the side of that lake until the sun set. They sat all night and watched the stars and the moon. And as the sun rose over the lake and the mist seemed to dispel, the eldest prince nudged the hunter and said, look, there is your answer. Look at the rainbow. There is your answer." And he whispered something in the hunter's ear. The hunter smiled, strode back into the cottage, put the feather down. "I have one wish," he said, and all three gathered round while the eldest prince watched from the doorway. "Oh, let it be me, they all said under their breath. "I wish that my mother could see my son lying in a golden cradle." Well, the feather disappeared, and there was a golden cradle, and in it the most beautiful little boy you've ever seen, and the old woman going, I see him. She didn't see the hovel. Oh, she didn't see anything but her beautiful grandchild. And what child needs a golden cradle? And so the cradle was taken. And what happened to that cradle is probably more stories than I could tell you this night. But, well, the hunter thanked the prince. And the prince, realizing that the tree did not exist this way, made his way back to the fork in the road. And that is the end of part 3.